First, to last Monday's release of the final report of the Royal Commission into Misconduct into the Banking, Superannuation and Financial Services Industries. Commissioner Kenneth Haynes' Royal Commission sat for 68 hearing days. It received 10,000 submissions and heard from more than 130 witnesses. And his final report contains 76 recommendations. Jared Brody is the CEO of the Consumer Action Law Centre, an organisation which did a great deal to agitate for this Royal Commission. Indeed, 6 of the 27 consumers who appeared before the Commission to share their harrowing stories are clients of the Consumer Action Law Centre. Jared Brody, welcome to the Law Report.
Thank you, Damien.
In a nutshell, will these 76 recommendations protect consumers into the future?
Look, I definitely hope so. If they are implemented fully, I think consumers should expect to say goodbye to the hard sell every time they contact their bank. I'd like to think that if these recommendations were adopted, particularly the ones that deal with the way in which bankers are paid and commissions and incentives, then we won't have to deal with that anymore and bankers will revert to providing a service for their customers rather than just selling us junk we don't need.
The Royal Commission found that ASIC, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, and APRA, the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority, certainly didn't do a robust job in keeping the banks in check. Well, what did Commissioner Kenneth Haynes have to say about the way these regulators operate?
One of the key findings he made was that they were too, I guess, gun-shy in going to court. Rather than taking legal action where they observed breaches of the law or alleged breaches of the law, instead they would negotiate with the bankers to resolve the situation out of court or issue an infringement notice, which is a lower form of penalty. And Commissioner Haynes has really took them to task over this and said that the regulators should be asking the question, why aren't we going to court when they observe a breach of the law? And so that really...
And seeking maximum penalties.
Yeah, absolutely. He was really concerned that these lower level responses don't create the required deterrence.
So he made these conclusions about the way the regulators have been operating up until now. But what did he recommend? He didn't recommend any draconian overhaul.
No, he certainly didn't. He has sort of made some recommendations around the way in which these regulators should go about their job. So go to court more was sort of one of his things. He's also recommended a new oversight body, a 3-person panel, I believe, whose job will be to assess whether the regulators are meeting their statutory objectives.
So, do you think this is a sufficient way of bumping up the regulatory architecture in this industry?
Well, I think if the concern is about accountability of the regulators, then we must think about accountability to whom. At the end of the day, the regulators are there for the public, for all Australians. So I would have liked the accountability mechanisms to be much more about accountability to the public. For example, why aren't all complaints that consumers made to ASIC made public? Then we can assess, are they actually picking up the issues and resolving them when there is consumer detriment?
I understand there has been in recent times some change of the guard at ASIC, but there's been no change of personnel in the senior ranks of APRA, I understand. Is there perhaps a need to kind of clean out these organisations as well?
Look, I think, well, you're right. So at ASIC, there has been a large turnover at the commission level. There's a new commissioner, there's two new deputy chairs. I think APRA undertaking its own enforcement review at the moment, we might see that that results in some change to some leadership there. I think at the end of the day, though, these regulators aren't resourced sufficiently to do the job that government tasks them to do. You know, the big end of town, the big banks, the big insurance companies, they have buckets of money to pay well-qualified lawyers to work out the way to get around the rules and to take the regulators to court.
Does Commissioner Haynes make any recommendations about the resourcing of these regulators?
He doesn't specifically know, unfortunately, although I know the government has sort of foreshadowed that there will be announcements about resourcing for regulators in the federal budget this year.
In his report, Commissioner Haynes makes, I think, 24 referrals for criminal or civil actions. He's making those referrals back to ASIC and to APRA?
That's correct.
How soon are they likely to proceed and what are the challenges and timelines around those actions?
Well, some of them, I must say, have already started. So after his interim report, we saw ASIC initiate a range of legal actions against some of the banks.
What for?
So for example, fees for no service against the National Australia Bank. That was obviously a key concern that came up in the financial planning round of hearings. I think that we're likely to see much more of that coming out over the next 12 to 18 months.
Jared Brody, let's now talk about the fundamental root cause or causes that led to the rot that we've seen in these industries. What do you see as the fundamental problems which allowed the rot to extend as widely and as deeply as it has?
One of the big ones is incentives. Incentives really matter to how people behave, whether they're executives at the front line, whether they're the teller that is serving you over when you're depositing your money. And the way in which the banks set their remuneration structures, the way in which they set sales targets, the incentive on all levels inside the bank was to sell your products to make a profit. They had less of a concern about whether that product was suitable for you, whether it was going to offer you value, whether it was actually going to help you achieve your financial goals. What the commissioner has said around that and around the conflicts of interest that are at heart as well. On conflicts, the commissioner was very clear in his disparagement of the range of conflicts of interest that exist in the finance sector. So, for example, intermediaries, the mortgage brokers or people selling you car loans in the car yard, they're selling it for their own purposes of making money, not to deliver what the duty they owe you in providing you a good service.
What is Commissioner Hayne recommending to tackle these structural cultural problems, these fundamental conflicts of interest? And are they going to be sufficient?
He has made a number of recommendations around the way in which intermediaries in the financial market are remunerated. So mortgage brokers, for example. He actually recommends that we should move away from commission selling and the consumer should pay for the mortgage broker advice through an upfront fee.
So they kind of know what the lay of the land is, right? There's no conflict of interest in the mortgage broker isn't selling something which might well be profitable for him or for her. In terms of his relationship or her relationship with the bank.
Yes, and I guess it matters who pays. So if the consumer's paying, they know who their customer is. When the big bank was paying them through trailing commissions or hidden upfront commissions, it was the big banks that were the mortgage broker's customers and not the actual customer themselves.
I've read that there are a range of recommendations which seem incredibly common sense. Car dealers will no longer be exempt from the National Consumer Credit Protection Laws. Why were they exempt?
This is a really good question. I mean, the National Consumer Credit Protection Act came into effect in 2009. And at that stage, consumer advocates and even the regulators, I must say, argued strongly against these loopholes and exemptions in the law, including those that apply to car dealers and other point of sale retailers. And there isn't really a good reason other than some concern about regulatory burden. You would expect when buying a financial product, you deal with professionals who are regulators such. So it makes sense for these loopholes to be closed.
Do you think these recommendations, these 76 recommendations, sufficiently address all the loopholes, all the conflicts of interest?
He made one overarching recommendation that loopholes and exemptions should be removed as a matter of course. So we may see a law reform around a simplification of the law to remove these across multiple areas that he didn't even name. At the end of the day, there is some structural issues in our banking sector as well, right? So the big banks, they also are the ones that have financial planners on staff. They're manufacturing the product and then they advise you on your product. Commissioner Hayne acknowledges that itself is a conflict of interest, but he hasn't really addressed this concern about whether our big banks should be broken up.
That's an issue around vertical integration, that they're actually involved at every phase of, and they're almost selling to each other. But he shied away. He didn't make any recommendation about whether or not that vertical integration should be addressed.
No, but what he did note was the government has already tasked the ACCC, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, to undertake 5 yearly reviews of vertical integration in our financial services market. So I don't think it's off the table, and it will take to task if it sees a consumer detriment from these arrangements.
How will the recommendations of the Royal Commission, assuming that they are implemented, improve the options or the pathways for consumers who feel they've had a rough deal from the banks and other financial people?
Well, hopefully the way in which banks resolve complaints will also be improved. We actually have a new body, the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, known as AFCA, which is an independent body that can assess a complaint between a consumer, a bank or insurance company. And its powers are quite strong. It can, you know, consider not only the law and what's reasonable in the circumstances, but also fairness. So it can make a determination that it thinks that a particular practice by the bank is unfair and rule in the consumer's favour. It will also have stronger powers to resolve systemic issues, so that's issues affecting more than that individual complainant, and there'll be greater requirements on it to refer matters to the regulator. So I think that will put an added onus on our regulators to get on and resolve these things at an enforcement level as well.
That's a dispute resolution or complaints handling scheme for disputes which emerge in the future. For disputes going back 10 years into the past, there's also going to be a redress scheme funded by the federal government.
Yeah, that's right. There are many people who have been successful with complaints and actually had an award of compensation made in their favour, but the particular financial advisor, say, has gone out of business and hasn't paid it. So the government is stomping up $30 million to make sure those people are not left out of pocket. They're also proposing, importantly, a new last chance compensation scheme going into the future. So this sort of issue can't happen again. And this will be industry funded. They'll have to upfront contribute an amount that will be available to pay consumers if a compensation award is made in their favour and remains unpaid.
Jared Brody, finally, six, I think, of your clients from the Consumer Action Law Centre appeared before the Commission. Can you tell me about some of your clients who appeared as witnesses?
Yeah. So firstly, there was a man, Mr. Robert Regan. Mr. Regan is an older man who was actually a subject of a scam, a romance scam. And he, over time, frittered his life savings. Then, without any money left, a broker enticed him to take out a home loan against his home, which he owned outright, of $50,000. And then that money went across to the scammer as well. Now, the bank in question failed to do the appropriate checks about whether this loan was affordable for him. Another client, Irene. Irene was a single mother struggling with a number of debts to credit card companies and even payday lenders. She was doing it tough. And her case study focused on a type of consumer credit insurance sold to her by Commonwealth Bank. So this is a type of add-on insurance that they bundle with your credit card and then purportedly will pay out if you're unable to make your credit card minimum repayments. Her policy was only ever going to pay out if she was working, and she was sadly unemployed, which again, the bank knew about. At one stage, she actually contacted the call centre because she was struggling with her repayments and saw this was coming out the premiums every month. And she asked them to have it removed. And they said, oh no, this is in your interests. We're not going to remove it. And Indigenous woman who was sold funeral insurance that really offered her very limited, if any, benefit. And Grant Stewart, who spoke about his son getting cold called over insurance again by an insurance company.
Have you spoken to any of your clients since the release of the final report? What do they think of this?
I think the clients that we've worked with throughout the Royal Commission are really quite proud to have made a contribution to making a fairer financial services marketplace, although it burdened them individually to have to tell their stories. Actually, some of them said to me that, you know, they were really reticent about it. They were really scared to do so. But once they'd done it, once they'd told their story, they realised what a powerful impact it can have. And so we're really pleased to do that.
Jared Brody, thank you very much for speaking to the Law Report.
Thanks, Damien.
Jared Brody, CEO of the Consumer Action Law Centre. On RN Radio Australia News Radio, or of course available as a podcast, this is the Law Report. I'm Damien Carrick.